What a true banger of a podcast today. Week one preview. We're talking real games that are actually going to happen. Andy Behrens joins me in the first half of the show to break down the four burning fantasy questions that Andy wants answered this week that you need to know the answer to. Three rookie quarterbacks are starting. What are we doing with those players? Who is going to be the right answer in the Buffalo Bills wide receiver room? And then in the second half of the show, the great Tara Roberts joins me to talk make or break players that you need to consider for your flex spot this weekend. Why we're kind of but maybe going to give it a shot on Devin Singletary and some older, not quite old, but older wide receivers who are boring, but you need to throw in that flex spot this week. No more talking. We got week one games to get into. Let's get into it. It's Friday, September 6th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball because it is time to preview week one. And joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Man, you always say that it's a hell of a day to talk ball, but like, today is really a hell of a day to talk ball, right? Like this is as good as it gets. We may at some point in our head think that we have all the answers right now, and we're about to figure out that we do not, in fact, have all the right answers. And we get the, you know, the chaos is just about to begin. So I'm excited about this. I am also excited that for the purposes of this show, I don't have to like fake it like I know everything or anything at all. I'm just asking questions and we're talking it through. I love that. I love the format of this one.
Oh, well, I mean, I love the format of this one too, because yes, it's not a, you know, I've railed against this a lot this off season and the lead up here to the season. Fantasy analysts should not be like, we are giving you the answers to the test. I hate that mentality because
yeah,
we don't have them. Okay. I got a lot of shelves back here behind me and none of them got the answers to the test. Okay. We're along for the ride just like you are. We might have, you know, thanks, of course, as Andy, we said in the pre-show conversation, thanks to our super in-depth research department. We do have a lot of, you know, potential stats and information and potentially guides to the answers, but we're trying to figure this out just like you are out there, people. You know, whatever, like these pretty little pictures, the glass paintings, what's it called? What's the glass in the church? I can't believe I'm blanking on this. I had the
stained
whole
glass.
Stained glass. We had these whole stained glass artworks painted of what we think is going to happen. And man, in week one, we're just throwing rocks through that because that stuff's all about to get smashed. It's going to be absolutely electric. And we got a whole big week one slate to preview here. Here's how the preview show is going to work each Friday. Andy is going to come on in the first half. Tara Roberts is going to join me in the second half. In the first half, Andy is going to provide four burning fantasy questions he wants answered every single week, and then four matchups he says deserves your attention. Games that maybe are a little overlooked, and also games that are just like, hey, you know this is going to be the big fantasy game of the week. Let's try to break it down. Then in the second half, Tara will join me to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups this weekend. Then Tara and I will end the show with our keys to winning each week. Before we dive into your stuff here, Andy, I want to say one thing. You know, I really wanted the preview shows this year to be structured around what you and Tara want to talk about. Like I want you guys mostly come up with the prompts here and I'm kind of reacting along the way. That was probably about, because I generally think the listener gets enough of me. Like they get enough of the things that interest me and the things I think about. And that's probably like 50% born from actual listener feedback, because I host the show every day. You generally are going to get my thoughts along the way. It's also like 50% my own deep-seated insecurities of like, how could people possibly be listening to this show and want more of what is going on in my brain? So for the most part, these are your prompts and topics. And buddy, I got to give you some credit here. I count at least three things on this outline that could be Chicago Bears, if not just outright Bears focused, Bears adjacent. So shout out to you for sticking to who you are, man.
Yeah, listen, I feel a little bit bad about that. But if we're asking me honestly, what I'm going to be focused on and what I care most about, the dawn of the Caleb Williams era is pretty much it. It's very difficult for me to veer away from that.
Yeah, at least it's better than in years past where Andy's talking about the Bears and it's Nick Foles to, you know, I don't know, Darnell Mooney. Okay, so we're the whole fantasy world should be excited about the Chicago Bears. So let's get right into it. Let's start with the four.
I'll just say that you missed the Yahoo era where I was consistently attempting to talk myself into Jay Cutler for about 5 years there.
Man, I'm so disappointed I missed that. I'm really kicking myself that I missed that. All right, so let's dive into it. The four burning fantasy questions that you want answered this week, Andy Behrens. Give me number one.
Yeah, number one probably won't be a surprise to people who've heard me bring this up again and again. But man, I need some answers in the Buffalo receiving core. Here's where we're at with Buffalo right now. We have every one of us who ranks at Yahoo has Josh Allen as the consensus. He's the number one quarterback entering the season in our draft ranks. We don't have a single Bills wide receiver ranked in the top 50, like in the composite. And it's not going to go down like that, right? Like I'm pretty sure it's not going to go down like that. That seems like it would be historically, just absolutely unprecedented. I'm sure there's a right answer in here somewhere. We just haven't really flagged it in the ranks. Now, it could be the right answer is Dalton Kincaid. And for a scenario to play out where there's no startable Bills receiver, and yet Josh Allen is the QB1, you know, we're going to have like 1900 receiving yards for Dalton Kincaid. And I guess that's out there as a possibility, but I'm not really banking on it. Josh Allen, you look back over these last 4 years, he's averaged about 4,400 passing yards, 34 passing scores each year. So I'm pretty confident that there's a fantasy wide receiver one or wide receiver two in this Bills receiving core. We haven't flagged him yet, and we're going to start to get our first clues this weekend. I'm pretty excited about that. I would say that there's a non-trivial chance that the Bills' leading receiver after this weekend is somebody super weird that we haven't even been talking about, right? It could be Mac Hollins. I have no idea. Yeah, but I am really excited to see this play out. The place where I've, you know, outside of Dalton Kincaid, the guy that I've actually drafted the most is Khalil Shakir. He was kind of a small sample hero last year, finished the season great. He was actually, of all receivers who were targeted 40 or more times last season, he had the highest passer rating when targeted in the league. So I'm probably most interested in him, but you know, you could talk me into Curtis Samuel. You could talk me into Keon Coleman. You could talk me into any of these guys, but I kind of feel like it's going to be a weirdo in week one who leads that receiving core.
Yeah, and I feel like we've talked about the Bills a lot this week on the podcast with Sal and Nate, and we should, because this is one of the key situations to get right in fantasy this year. Like, what is this offense going to look like? And I can't wait to see it in week one, because they really do look like they are transitioning to more of a team that leans into the run, as we detailed yesterday in the fantasy film room with Nate Tice, but two, more of a spread it out attack as opposed to funneling through one singular gravitational force that was Stephon Diggs for that era of the Buffalo Bills Josh Allen experience. The thing I would say is twofold here, Andy. I think I'm with you that if there's a lead receiver or a guy to bet on in week one, I think it is Khalil Shakir. Like a month ago, I would have definitely said Curtis Samuel, but because he's coming off of an injury, you know, he might ramp up a little slower to start the season. So I think week one, the guy that I'd be betting on if you have to play a Bills receiver in fantasy, you're either playing in a pretty deep league, a dynasty league, or your team is already in a little bit of trouble. So I don't think you should have to play one of these guys in week one. I think if you do, it's probably Shakir. He'd be my favorite to be the most productive receiver. The other thing I think, though, is that what the week one picture is not going to be what the course of the entire season is. I think there a lot will be made, Andy, of these week one results, but that might be very different than what the picture looks like in week 15, 16, 17, et cetera. So that's one thing I think very strongly. My one pushback on you in this whole discussion is that I do think we could get a situation where Josh Allen is the QB1, Dalton Kincaid is who drafters expect him to be, and then as a result, none of the Bills receivers are like true wide receiver twos in fantasy. I think they could be a bunch of like wide receiver threes, or there's a Khalil Shakir month, there's a Keon Coleman month, there's a Curtis Samuel month, kind of something like that. I do think that is within the range of outcomes.
Yeah, I guess I'll allow for that because we did see the, you know, the Packers were what they were last year, right? They didn't have a consistent every week, set it and forget it fantasy receiver. And Jordan Love was still obviously great, a top five quarterback. So it's in play. And obviously part of the value for Josh Allen is also the rushing contributions that we're going to get from him. So it's like you can make the math work, but at a bare minimum, you know, there's no way that Josh Allen is the QB1 and there's not a top 50 receiver here. I do agree that there could be like two or three guys who end up in the 30s somewhere and it's a different one every week. That's possible. But we're clearly too low on the best receivers in this group, whoever they are. I just think it's one of the most fascinating unanswered questions as we come into the season.
All right, let's move on to number two here, which is definitely something Bears. I called this Bears adjacent, but it's pretty Bears centric here. Number two,
it's a little Bearsy, and I wanted to throw it open to the other rookie quarterbacks as well. We have three rookie quarterbacks who are starting this week. A couple of them are being drafted almost everywhere, right? In Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. If not as fantasy starters, then they're being drafted as lottery ticket players and you know, bench quarterbacks. But Bo Nix, perhaps in a tough spot on the road at Seattle, difficult environment for your first NFL regular season start. But, you know, he's got a little bit of fantasy upside as well because he's got some mobility. He has a not too terrible receiving core. Maybe that's debatable. We've got other rookies who like maybe should start, including Drake May. That isn't happening yet, but we're about to get some answers on Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. I think the runway for Caleb is pretty like, you know, the Bears are facing some tough teams early in the season, but they aren't facing, you know, they don't open with obviously one of the NFL's best defenses, right? It's the Tennessee Titans, and they've added some pieces, and they're probably going to be better, especially down the road. But they don't look like, you know, the most challenging defense that can possibly appear on the schedule. And it's not really that bad for the first month and a half of the season. So there's a nice little runway for Caleb. I would say that Jaden Daniels gets a tougher test in week one against Tampa. There's some real playmakers there. There's some dudes that have been around for a long time. There's some dudes that have seen all the great running quarterbacks before, right? So like, I don't know that you're gonna show a lot of Tampa's members of Tampa's defense anything they haven't seen previously. So that is a more challenging test for him. But of course, if he comes out of that with a couple of touchdown passes and 60 rushing yards, we're going to feel ecstatic about it.
Yeah. The Jaden Daniels one, I think, is interesting because we'll save Caleb Williams because we'll talk more about the Bears, in one of the four matchups that Andy says deserves your attention. Shock. Bears game deserves your attention. Andy Barron says, and Bo Nix, Bo Nix definitely being drafted in Superflex. He might be a starting option at some point, but that Broncos Seahawks game is one of the ones on the week one slate that I just don't have a good feel for. You could almost tell me anything happens in that game and I would believe you because it's a fully new coaching staff in Seattle, but a bunch of holdover players. So that's a tough one to project. And then the Broncos are just the Broncos, and Sean Payton could have something weird and crazy ready to debut in week one. But again, it's a rookie quarterback on the road in his first start. Generally, that's not an offense I'm optimistic on. So I want to focus on the Jaden Daniels question here for you, Andy Behrens, because he is somebody that was mostly drafted as a QB1 in fantasy. He's probably going to be a potential starting option for people in week one. And man, I don't want to put too much stock into preseason, especially preseason play calling and offensive design. And how many times have we seen an athletic rookie quarterback in preseason playing in a very vanilla offense? And, you know, I always think of like Cam Newton and RG3. Those teams show nothing in the preseason. They come out in week one and it looks pretty damn good with those guys, you know, all those years ago. We could certainly see that with Jaden Daniels. The tough thing for me here is that, man, didn't a lot of that stuff in the preseason look like Cliff Kingsbury's offense? You know, RPO heavy, get it out really, really fast, in space, a lot of screens and checkdowns and things like that, the horizontal raid. The fact that it looked a lot like that makes me a little bit nervous, especially going against Todd Bowles, a veteran defensive coordinator who can throw the kitchen sink at a young quarterback. I'm pretty nervous about Washington going into the season, probably more nervous than I was maybe, or I've come down on this team generally more than I was in kind of like mid-July.
Yeah, that's a that's an interesting sort of starting point. Like a whole lot of things seemed possible for Washington. If you think back to, like, you know, 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, heck, Brandon Ayuk was still on the table as a player that they might end up adding, right? Like we were thinking very differently about the receiving core. You could talk yourself into Jahan Dotson, who's not even there anymore.
Nope.
And now it just seems less and less likely to your point about what the preseason has looked like. Whatever your hopes were for Terry McLaurin, oh, he's going to be this movable chess piece. Probably not. It's probably not going to happen. It's probably going to look a lot like Kingsbury's offenses in the past. Maybe it works. Jaden Daniels still a really fun player with a really fun skill set, and it could be really useful for fantasy. Just as you were mentioning Bo Nix, and I don't want to get hung up on Bo Nix and the Broncos offense here, but I do think there is an interesting open question as to, you know, they just had the weirdest passing game last year. I'm still not over it, right? Like all they let Russell Wilson do was throw behind the line of scrimmage and then take a couple of deep shots each game. And you just don't see a lot of NFL passing offenses that look exactly like that. Bo Nix can do that though. Like if you, man, you want to talk about something that you could ask Bo Nix to do right away and it would work, that is it. Cause that's really what the college offense looked like that he was running, last year. So I can imagine them running it back with that same weird Russell Wilson offense and it all works out just fine.
Yeah. Jaleel McLaughlin, Javonte Williams, get ready to catch the football, baby. That's probably happening in week one. I think people that draft Jaden Daniels they're going to end up starting him just because of where they had him. And look, he might get away with a good rushing floor, but I'm going to probably have him below guys like Jared Goff and Tua and even Caleb Williams and definitely Dak Prescott, even in a tougher matchup on the road, just because I know what that picture looks like. And I'm a little, hopefully we come on the week one recap, Andy, which you're going to be on with me every week. Hopefully we're able to come back on Sunday and just be like, hey, Washington looked much better and much more exciting than maybe I thought. But right now going into it, like I said, my vibes are a little bit lower on Washington. All right, let's move on to point number three, Andy Behrens, the fantasy questions you want answered in week one.
Yeah, point number three, I almost regret putting this in the outline because I don't have an answer for you on this, and it's really one of those things that is just going to make people feel a little bit worried, and it won't. This is not productive in any way, but I have a little bit of anxiety about the brand name wide receivers who were either holdouts or hold-ins during training camp, right? We still have one, as we speak here right at this moment, we still have one situation that's unresolved with Jamar Chase. He's only barely practiced a couple of times. We also had the CeeDee Lamb situation. We had Brandon Ayuk. I think it is fair to at least fret a little bit about what that is going to look like after, key players who are, centerpiece players in their team's offenses, have basically been sidelined for most of training camp. That's not usually a great recipe for early season success. We have more recent experience with this at the running back position, right? You remember the Jacobs and Taylor situations last year that didn't look great early in the season. This obviously a different position. Things are fundamentally different, and we don't, I was trying to think of like super notable wide receiver holdouts, like receivers at this level, and there's not really a ton of them to look back on and say, I can now definitively say this is what it's going to look like in opening week. But we had we had Michael Thomas years ago. We had Terrell Owens way back in the day. There's just not a lot of players at this level who sit out basically all of camp in the preseason and then step in week one. I wouldn't do anything different with them if you've got them on fantasy rosters, right? You can't not play CeeDee Lamb. You can't not play Brandon Ayuk. I'm not telling you. I'm certainly not telling you that. But it is a little bit of an early season concern.
Yeah, I mean, with those two guys specifically, the good thing is they're just going to get dropped right into the same position that they've always been. They're familiar with the quarterback. They're familiar with the system. And look, like with CeeDee Lamb, I don't think he needs practice time to do like exactly what he did last year. You know, he's still on like the exempt list or whatever, and people are like freaking out about that, but it's because they're just trying to use a roster spot or whatever. Like that is literally no big deal. you're going to play CeeDee Lamb for sure. Brandon Ayuk, I mean, even if this holdout, hold-in thing had never happened, which it was pretty funny that he admitted in a press conference, like, yeah, I probably made that a little more difficult than it needed to be. Hey, who among us, pal? Who among us hasn't done that in a similar situation? Because I definitely have similar situations to call back on in my life, for sure. I've negotiated. I know Andy's negotiated multi-million-dollar contracts before. I personally have never, but so maybe I'll let you speak to that here in the rebuttal. But with Ayuk, if he gets sacrificed to, you know, Sauce Gardner in this week one matchup and, you know, Debo eats instead against a zone coverage heavy defense, that's within the range of outcomes every single week anyways. So
yeah.
I am definitely interested to see if there is a bigger plan for if he takes another step as a player, if he just takes another step within the course of the offense. But that's less of like a week one question, more of a season long question. The one that I think we should discuss a little bit is Ja'Marr Chase. And I know I almost don't even care. Like, if he signs a contract before this show comes out, I almost think it doesn't really matter. Let's just say hypothetically, he's playing in week one. You hear from the Bengals, he is playing in week one. I still think he could play in week one, and because he shows up right before the season starts, he plays like 50% of the snaps, especially because they're going against the Patriots, Andy. They don't need Ja'Marr Chase to beat the Patriots. They can do the Yoshi Voss thing and the T. Higgins thing and be just fine, right? They're probably going to be the most used survivor pick in week one, the Cincinnati Bengals. So if you have Ja'Marr Chase, like, do you take anything that I just said, and is that actionable information, or is it just like you said, this is probably just going to make you worried and that's about that?
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's where it lands. Although I have, you know, I have a couple of teams that, you know, if you, and there are people out there who play in like Yahoo public style leagues where your backup receivers are really good players, right? You might have, I don't know, you might have Christian Watson on the bench. You might have some truly fantasy relevant players on the bench. And I can't, you know, I'd be looking at them, thinking about starting them over Ja'Marr Chase in a scenario where, as you say, it's imaginable that he might play 40% of the snaps, that he might just be in there. I could be less than that. I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. And we don't even know what his contract status is going to be when that game kicks off. It's a wild one, and they have taken it right up to the line. I'm probably going to have him outside my top 10, which feels stupid. Same. It's a matchup that I should be willing to exploit. It's a game that they should win comfortably. He's also somebody who, like, as soon as he comes back, it's not like we have to worry about the rapport that Ja'Marr Chase has with, you know, Joe Burrow. That's nonsensical. So there shouldn't be a lot of worries here. But the idea that, you know, he might not be a 90% of the snap sort of player initially does have me a little bit concerned.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm just looking at week one rankings right now, and one of these situations is not applicable to this, but I would say that there's at least three wide receiver duos I'm looking at in week one where I think the guy that was drafted second is probably the better play in week one. I think Debo's a better play than Ayuk in week one. I think Cooper Kupp is a better play than Puka Nacua in week one. That's the one that doesn't fit into this, but just because of the way August rolled out and the fact that he's coming in with an injury and Cooper Kupp is not, in a potential shootout game that we'll talk about later, Rams at Lions. And I think the same thing with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. Like, I think T. Higgins is a guy that was drafted, you know, around like wide receiver 30. His ADP never came up despite all this Ja'Marr Chase like stuff at the very end, kind of bringing his ADP down. And I think if you have T. Higgins on, that's one thing I do feel convicted about in this situation. If you've got T. Higgins on your fantasy team in week one, you should probably break some ties in favor of starting him, because I think he's in a really good position here with Chase probably being somewhat limited, even from a snaps perspective, maybe, but probably from just a deployment perspective, because they didn't get to work with him all offseason.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And they've got, you know, he's certainly he's more than enough as a lead receiver to get them past the Patriots, I would think. So it's a really good point. I hadn't even really considered the way I should have the Rams receivers arranged. But yeah, I think you're right to point out all of those scenarios.
All right, let's move into your fourth and final question you want answered in week one, Andy.
Yeah, we've just got a bunch of unsettled backfields across the league that several of which I think can be really fantasy relevant and might have some right answers in there for us. The ones that I highlighted in the document, the you know, the Bengals. Bengals are just a big flaming open question, I guess, in opening week. I hadn't even really thought about that so much. But like there's a real Zach Moss, Chase Brown discussion to be had. Chase Brown is somebody who looks great in limited duty. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that they were asking him to do late last season, we could imagine that, you know, in a Joe Burrow led offense could look really good. Exactly how much of the backfield share can he command this year? I think that's an interesting one. The Bears, we've been drafting DeAndre Swift as if he's the clear number one, and in many cases we've not drafted Khalil Herbert at all, and Herbert played a ton in the preseason, and there's every reason to think that the team still likes him. And I don't know, that could be really close to an even split, and the Bears could be a pretty frisky offense too. So like that strikes me as a pretty relevant backfield. We don't have clear answers in the Chargers backfield, but we do know that it's like a, you know, we know what we're going to get out of Harbaugh and Greg Roman, right? They're going to run the ball all day as long as they can. They'd love it if every game could feature, you know, 35 carries and 28 or 30 pass attempts. That would be a dream scenario. We haven't even seen a lot of these running backs in the preseason. Gus Edwards has been kind of wrapped in bubble a little bit, but we're going to get some combination there of J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, and then it's a big open question as to whether Kamani Vidal is even involved in opening week. If he's not, he's going to be dropped all over the place, and mm-hmm. he's one of those guys who becomes then interesting later in the season. And the last backfield that I highlighted here, and I don't really know that there's a right answer here, but the Cowboys backfield is wide open to me. Maybe it's just a boring answer, and we're going to see a ton of Zeke Elliott, and we're going to see a little bit of Rico Dowdle. I know that Rico Dowdle has his supporters. I don't personally think that Dowdle was all that different from Tony Pollard last year, and I'm not that excited about him. I'd kind of like to see if Deuce Vaughn saw the field a little bit more, what that would look like. But that to me is also a big wide open question.
What about Dalvin Cook, Andy? You mentioned old Dalvin Cook there.
If he's going to be active week one. Don't know what that's going to look like. All I've seen is one training video of him throwing a ball against a wall, and I don't know. He looked healthy.
Looks great. Oh, he looks great. I wish I looked like that. I'll tell you that much. But I like with the Cowboys backfield, I think I only care about what the week one result is if it points me in the direction of Rico Dowdle. Because if it's just like you said, we're going to get some boring Zeke. Okay, yeah, you can squeeze some points out of Zeke Elliott, I guess, this year. Wonderful. But I don't think it's going to be anything of serious consequence from a fantasy perspective. It will just be some boring production that probably has almost no ceiling. And by the way, I think if their answer to the question about their run game is Zeke Elliott, I think their run game is going to be in some trouble this year. So if we get a big needle moving performance out of Rico Dowdle, I think that's the best thing we could possibly get. I don't really know what the hell to think of the Chargers backfield, other than I loved your analysis on Kamani Vidal there, that he's a guy that people will draft and probably drop, and then somebody else will pick him up later on. And hopefully that goes well. I do just want to close this on the Bengals again, because there's been like a real constant, Michael Scott snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap with the Bengals running backs and kind of the reports out of training camp and everything. It sounded like for a while that Chase Brown was the guy they really wanted. And then they finished the offseason talking up Zach Moss and just the reliableness of his game. I think both of these guys were good targets all draft season. And it's another one where I think maybe the week one usage is not going to be indicative of the full season results. But I do think the way they've finished the offseason, Andy, and you can tell me if you agree with this, I do think that Zach Moss is probably the guy I'd expect to touch the ball most in week one. And if you need somebody from this backfield in week one, I think it is probably Zach Moss.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I would guess that Zach Moss is going to out-touch Chase Brown. There's also been this, you know, I don't want to call any fantasy industry people out necessarily, but there's been this ongoing debate, like on fantasy Twitter and in fantasy social circles, over exactly what Chase Brown is and whether he's suited to be a full workload guy. I got to tell you, that had never even crossed my mind, having watched a lot of him in college. I mean, that guy was 30 plus touches a game and an absolute workhorse back at the college level. And that's not the same as being, you know, such in the NFL. But man, I think he could handle the full workload. He certainly did in his final year at Illinois, and he destroyed the best defenses on that schedule. So like, I think there's real upside to Chase. I'm a little bit more interested in Chase Brown, but I've always been a little bit biased toward him. And I thought some of his best moments last year were like real sort of signature plays that pointed to, you know, the potential to be not a top five running back or anything like that, but somebody that we could really lean on if he fell into a full workload. So I'm a little bit more interested in Chase Brown, but again, as you say, I think they were both very well priced in drafts.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very classic. I bet once the games start, we'll find out the answer, and kind of having like hot takes about it before the season almost makes no sense. So I can't wait to see what that week one rotation looks like, and again, what it involves to over the course of the season, because I do think whatever week one has for us might not be the answer. That's going to just be, I'm going to keep saying that basically all of week one, is that what the answer is in week one is not necessarily always the right answer. On that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dive into four matchups that the Andy Behrens say, he says these deserve your attention. So let's take a break and then we'll get into it. All right, Andy, four matchups that say, you know, these deserve your attention. That's what you say, Andy Behrens. So, of course, starting off first is Tennessee Titans at Chicago Bears, your Chicago Bears. Andy, why is this an exciting matchup?
Yeah, listen, I feel like you might suspect that I listed this game entirely because of the Bears, and that is, but I want to assure you that that is not the case. I think Tennessee is really interesting.
I'm glad you said that.
I'm not gonna say that like I think Will Levis is gonna be some sort of like top 12 quarterback. I don't really think that's in the cards necessarily, but I think he might be good. Mm-hmm. He certainly has, you know, we saw the one huge game last year basically, and then everything else was relatively quiet. But man, he's got a lot of arm. This is a fine example of a team that really built things up around him. And we saw a lot of that across the league this year, where teams really sort of dedicated to beefing up an offensive environment around a young quarterback. And man, they sure did that in Tennessee. Like a couple of major improvements on the offensive line. They add Calvin Ridley. You know, it's probably a downgrade in the backfield from Derrick Henry to whatever Tony Pollard is at this stage, but it's still a pretty good backfield. It still has Tyjae Spears. He looked really good. So this is a pretty fun environment, but also Tennessee is one of those places where all the stuff is new. We got a new coaching staff. We got new coordinators. We got, you know, like they've flipped more than half of their like 22 starters from last year, right? Like major new pieces on defense. And oftentimes when that happens, it doesn't all look great in opening week. And then obviously on the other side, we have a Bears offense that sort of reinvented itself around a pretty talented rookie quarterback. But I actually feel like it's weird because the Bears have a rookie quarterback, but I feel like I'm more comfortable with what the Bears are than what the Titans are.
Well, they're plopping Caleb Williams in here. They're bringing in Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, but there's a lot of established stuff that was there from last year with Chicago. Same head coach, new offensive coordinator, but a lot, you know, DJ Moore thrived with them last year. A lot of the same offensive line pieces. The defense was really good last season. So I'm with you that typically rookie quarterback first start does not go well. And you know, it might not go well for Caleb Williams, but he is set up to succeed more than usual. I do agree with you that this is kind of, I'm giving you flack for putting this on the outline, but it's a big referendum game on both sides here. I think for Chicago, we will get some definitive answers about what the receiver hierarchy, pecking order, usage is going to be. Just what can we like get something here, a variable to set expectation for Caleb Williams. And yeah, then on the Tennessee side, I don't think there's a lot of fantasy starters in Tennessee in week one. Probably Calvin Ridley would be the one guy that you're probably playing here, because he, if you have to play somebody, because he was healthier coming into the year than DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think you got to start one of these backs, but again, we're going to get a sample of what this Titans offense looks like. So I agree with you. This is definitely a game to watch. Probably not a game where there's a bunch of must starts here, anything like that, but it's a big information gathering game. The second game you have here, Pittsburgh Steelers at Atlanta Falcons. There's a lot of players that people will be starting here, Andy. So what's something that the people need to know, need to watch from this particular game?
Yeah, this one is fascinating, because we can't have either of these teams just absolutely faceplant fantasy wise, right? Like we have major investments in both backfields. When Mike Tomlin described his own team's backfield just a couple days ago, man, he was shouting out Cordarrelle Patterson. So that could be like a little Hell bit of yeah. a messy three-headed committee. Plus, we've got, you know, the special intrigue to this game is that we have Arthur Smith now, the OC in Pittsburgh, facing his former team. That's wild. What does it look like with Russell Wilson? Not that we're starting Russell Wilson, but like we need George Pickens to be fed. He's been drafted as a player that you can't really sit on benches, and there's high expectations for him. So Pittsburgh, relatively interesting in terms of like what the backfield split looks like, and whether Russell Wilson can be a functional NFL quarterback at this stage after the weirdest season last year. And then obviously Atlanta, we have the Kirk Cousins situation. How does he look coming off the Achilles? What exactly is the backfield split? Because again, we've talked about this before, like 2 months ago, Bijan was going to be Christian McCaffrey. And then like 2 weeks ago, a beat writer said, it's going to be about a 50-50 split in the backfield. So let's just see what that looks like. That's interesting to me. What is Kyle Pitts going to be? Is he still just going to run nothing but deep routes all the time? Or are we going to see some short area Kyle Pitts? And is he healthy? And then do we get the Drake London season that everybody's waiting for? So there's just a lot of questions to be answered here. And I don't think this is a game that like the nation is going to be focused on, but man, fantasy managers really have to care about it.
God, you're so right about that. It will be much higher on the Q rating for fantasy folks than it is for the national zeitgeist, I guess. And I, one thing I'm keeping an eye on is just Drake London's alignment. Is this a guy that's just going to run out at X receiver every single snap? I doubt it. Part of my equation with Drake London this season has been that this coaching staff, which is totally brand new, has, even if Kirk Cousins has played in this system before, they've never, or like branches off of this tree, they've never worked with him. There's a lot of new here. Drake London going to line up more in the slot? Is he going to be moved around the formation a little bit? I sure hope so too, because Joey Porter Jr. is one of the better like press man corners. I think Drake London can definitely beat and hang with a corner like that, but getting him away from top coverage on the outside is a big part of maximizing his upside. So I will have my eye on that. And then, with the Steelers, it's just, what the hell does this offense look like, man? So I'm with you that is a very interesting. This is an interesting game that I think we know who we're playing in this game. These offenses should be pretty highly concentrated, and I want to feel that they're highly concentrated coming out of this game as well. So let's move on to two big games here to finish up that have a ton of fantasy players and a ton of obvious juice, starting with Houston at Indianapolis. Andy, just divisional game. Mega consequences, tons of players on both sides that we're starting. What do you have your eye on in this matchup?
Yeah, my last two games are just, it's just two games I can't wait to see, because the players are fun on each side. We think that, you know, all four teams are going to be super relevant, like perhaps deep into the postseason. Houston Indy is fascinating, because we all see the path for Anthony Richardson to be the overall QB1. He was what an incredible, basically two game sample we got out of Anthony Richardson last year. Is four games. He only finished like one or two of them. Right. But man, they built an offense that really suited him. Again, we didn't see a whole lot of it, but just in terms of fantasy points per dropback, he was amazing. And then if we don't get Josh Downs in this game, or if we get a limited version of Josh Downs, exactly how good can A.D. Mitchell be? He looked great in the preseason, little roller coastery in the preseason. But man, when it looks right for A.D. Mitchell, it looks really right. And that's somebody who I think is pretty interesting. And then obviously on the Houston side, we get to our first clues as to how these receivers are going to be used and what the target hierarchy is going to be exactly, because that's just a loaded team, obviously an ascending team, great offense, some fun pieces on defense, like a real contender if everything comes together and they hit sort of a 90th percentile outcome. But you know, the receiving core is still very much an open question. It could be that they're all the right answer. It could be that Tank Dell is great, yeah, and Nico Collins is still great, and Stephon Diggs is better than what we saw in the second half last year and is still great, and that CJ Stroud passes for 4,800 yards or 5,000 yards, right? Like, that's definitely in play. So I would love that to be the answer. But if it's not that, then we're going to get our first clues as to exactly what we can expect from like Steph Diggs and how he slots into this receiving room.
This Colts defense was a unit that CJ Stroud just kind of took to the woodshed last year. They lost the first game. They won the second game that got the Texans into the playoffs. But the first game, he threw 47 passes, 384 yards, 2 touchdowns, 8.2 yards per attempt. That week 18 game, which was a play-in game, 77 completion rate, 264 yards, 134.1 pass rating, 10.2 yards per attempt. And Nico Collins went ham in both those games. And they added Leatu Latu, the rookie pass rusher, but secondary is still generally the same. Gus Bradley still the coordinator. So I'd be trying to start all my Texans this week. And then, yeah, on Anthony Richardson, I feel the exact opposite. Well, I feel similar to what I said about Jaden Daniels, where young quarterback, rocky in the preseason. But I'm very confident that Shane Steichen's going to have some different wrinkles for us here in week number one with Anthony Richardson. So, yeah. Playing Richardson, playing Michael Pittman, playing Jonathan Taylor, but very curious to see how this offense plays out. Final game, Andy, that you have here, and an obvious one, Rams at Lions. I mean, just a banger of a game.
Yeah.
It's definitely a get all your kids in the pool. You start everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, what particularly, if there's one thing people should be watching in this game beyond all of the obvious players, what would it be?
Yeah, not even really, you know, nobody that you really have to think twice about fantasy-wise. Maybe a couple names, but not too many. This is just a game that I can't wait to see, and two teams that are really, really fun, two offenses that we're gonna love all season as long as they stay healthy. If there are open questions here, it is, you know, I guess I'll just remind people that David Montgomery is still around. And, you know, we were drafting Jahmyr Gibbs at like the 1-2 turn, and that felt a little rich for me. And I love the talent with Jahmyr Gibbs, but I also don't think that David Montgomery goes away. And he led all running backs in carries inside the 5-yard line last year. So like that's a problem if you've got Gibbs. It's less of a problem if they average 35 points a game, which they might, because they're a really fun team. And then the other open question here is, what does it look like with Jameson Williams? And is the usage different? Do they feed him meaningful targets, or is he still, you know, kind of a part-time, let's scheme something up for him, let's take a deep shot to him, but maybe he's not a super relevant piece of the offense? They have really gassed him up all offseason. And obviously the last taste that we got from Jameson Williams in the playoffs last year was great. Man, if we get like a 7-target game for Jameson Williams, 7 targets or 7 touches, something like that, people are going to be really excited.
As I said a couple of podcasts ago, if you draft Jahmyr Gibbs and you get pissed about David Montgomery's usage, you're not built for this hobby. That's a great reminder, Andy Behrens, that you are not allowed to get upset about David Montgomery because you signed up for this. If you drafted Jahmyr Gibbs, you know this is coming. My only point on this game is I just want the Rams to put some of my August anxieties to bed. I want them to come out here and look great on offense against a defense that I think is improving. I think the Lions should be favored in this game. I think they will win this game, but I just want the Rams to hang. I want the offense to look good and smooth and operational, because I don't love how August went for the Rams with the Puka injury, with like, oh yeah, we signed Jonah Jackson so that we could play Steve Avila at center. Never mind. Actually, we're going to reverse that now after Jonah Jackson's been injured all training camp. Also, we're not going to have Alaric Jackson. Rob Havenstein's coming in with an injury. I want all of those anxieties to be merely August things and not something we are talking about This is the Sunday night game, so this will be my monologue game actually on the week one recap. So I'm gonna have a lot to say on this game. Everybody's gonna have a lot to say about this game. But Andy, you've said it all. You've done it all. Appreciate you, buddy, for stopping by, and very much looking forward to finally getting some week one games in and recapping it with you all on Sunday.
How about it? Let's do it.
What a time to be alive. Thanks again to Andy Behrens. See you after the dust settles Sunday night, my friend. After the break, Tara Roberts joins the show to share her make or break players for week one right after this. Joining us now is the one and only Yahoo's very own Tara Roberts. Tara, it's week one. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling excited. There's like a 10,000 unknowns and committee backfields and all that good stuff, but I feel like we're going to figure it out. I feel like we're going to make all of this work, and it's going to be a fantastic week one, and we're all going to win. Yeah.
That optimism was like a breath of fresh air, because I'll tell you what, after the first half of the show with Andy and writing my preview column of the week, I feel like there's so much I don't know and so much uncertainty despite all my confident projections over the last few months. So you are a breath of fresh air, Tara Roberts, and I appreciate that. And the best part about this segment every week, Tara, your make or break players, that you, Tara Roberts, know the players that people need to care about. They need to really kind of focus on for some of these start-sit decisions, you know, underlying situations that people really need to pay attention to. So that's what we're going to do here in this segment every single week. So let's talk through these 5 to 6 players that you have as your make-or-break players for week number one, starting with Giants running back Devin Singletary.
Oh, Giants running back Devin Singletary. I feel like everybody, we like Devin Singletary, but when it comes to Devin Singletary, you never confidently say, yeah, I'm absolutely leaning into Devin Singletary this week. But It is officially the first season where, I mean, he's the RB1. He's the lead back of this team. Unlike previous season where he's had to scrape and fight and claw and knock somebody out of their starting role, I feel like he's finally got it, and we just got to lean into it this week. He's got that nice, safe floor. And when we look at the matchup with Minnesota's defense, Minnesota was tough against the run last year, very weak against the pass. But the thing that I've really been keying in on this preseason, heading into the season, is that these defenses have changed so much in the offseason. You really have to take a look at them and say, what were the key losses that they had? And Minnesota's defense had some very key losses, including Danielle Hunter, which was a big loss, and that's going to affect their pass rush. That's going to affect their run defense. And Devin Singletary, this might be a more appealing matchup than we think, especially when you think about the change in quarterback situation now. We've got Sam Darnold. We don't have the same high-flying Kirk Cousins kind of offense. So this will be a closer game. Two teams that aren't spectacular, and will be able to rely on the run game to have more output than we would expect from the Giants offense this season.
Yeah, this game in week one has been a really tough game for me to get a handle on, Giants and Vikings, because, you know, you've got two quarterbacks who I think if you gave their teams, you know, decision makers truth serum, they probably aren't in love with the fact that this is most likely the majority of the season starter. Obviously the Vikings, you know, they could say whatever they want about, okay, we're happy Sam Darnold's starting week one for us. He wanted to eventually turn this thing over to JJ McCarthy. Your plan is not to start Sam Darnold for 18 game or 17 games, no matter what the Sam Darnold oligarchs want you to believe. On the flip side, Daniel Jones, I think that they're already having some buyer's remorse on the whole Daniel Jones contract situation. And these are two defenses, Tara, on the other side of it, where, you know, Brian Flores threw the kitchen sink at quarterbacks last year. They've played more cover zero than anybody else in the NFL by a lot. They really blitzed the hell out of teams, but they also played coverage to those blitz. It was a very unique defense. That feels like something that's going to put Daniel Jones in the blender. And on the other side of that, Sam Darnold under pressure from Dexter Lawrence, Kayvon Thibodeau, Brian Burns, and those guys, that feels like a potential disaster. All that being said, though, I do think it kind of leans into a potential run-heavy game script here. You know, it's a slobber knocker, you know, potential low-scoring game. I could see Singletary getting a lot of touches in this one. I've been so reticent to get excited about the Singletary experience, Tara, because like you said, he's Devin Singletary. He's a fine NFL running back. I just wish he was playing on a different offense. Like, if this was Devin Singletary playing on, you know, I don't know, the Bills, which is ironic because he played on for the
Texans,
Bills.
Texans, like, send him back.
Yeah, right. Any of these quarterbacks that are great, right? Which he's actually played for both Josh Allen and CJ Stroud's offenses in the past. Then it's like, okay, I'll take my shots. I just wonder that this is a bit of a, hey, it's a coach familiarity pick here with Devin Singletary because Brian Daboll had him in Buffalo. And it's just an uninspiring type of offense. But I do hear a point about him kind of projecting well in week one.
Yeah, I get it. I have the same mindset here. And when I look at this long term throughout the season, is Devin Singletary going to be the guy that you're turning to every single week? Maybe not. We've kind of hyped up Tyrone Tracy as maybe a rookie that can get in there at some point. But this matchup specifically for week one, like you were saying, bodes well for both teams to utilize the ground game, like Aaron Jones in this as well. So if this is going to be fought on the ground of two teams saying they don't want to overwhelm their quarterbacks in week one, the volume will be there. And all we need is just one touchdown from Devin Singletary to make this a nice week. So I'm okay with leaning into it.
Yeah, Vikings week one, Commanders in week two. Those are the weeks to start Devin Singletary. If you drafted Devin Singletary and you're not starting him weeks one and two against some lesser proven defenses and offenses that aren't going to get out to big leads, what the hell did you draft him for? So by that logic, I see why he makes your list here. Let's move on to the next player who is certainly much more exciting, at least to me, Saints wide receiver Rashid Shaheed.
I want to put Rashid Shaheed in my make or break players every single week because he's like the poster child for make or break. The guy that will get you less than 5 points or more than 15. It's boom bust every single week. And I love Rashid Shaheed. I'm risky. I like to throw it out there. This one, I think, kind of leans more towards the break end because there are some concerns here. And it's not the defense that's the major issue here, because while the Panthers were extremely good against the pass, while the second fewest points to opposing quarterbacks, the third fewest points to opposing wide receivers in 2023, again, this is another team that had a ton of defensive changes. They won't be the same. They will probably get lit up both on the ground and through the air. But this week in particular, that is the concern here. We've got him coming off. He's been dealing with this injury all throughout preseason. And if they're able to, the Saints are able to control this on the ground with Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill, of course, then they might not have to throw it deep. Rashid Shaheed, we know who he is. We're hoping that he can transition into a more regular, versatile role as the official wide receiver two of this offense. But if he's still that deep ball, big threat kind of receiver, they might not have to actually do that in order to beat Carolina this week. So that's the only concern I have for him. I think this is one that on a weekly basis will be teetering back and forth, trying to predict those boom weeks. And I just don't know if this is going to be one of those Rashid Shaheed boom weeks.
The one thing I will say, if you're looking to go against what Tara just said, which I don't think you should, it was great advice, and some of the risks about Rashid Shaheed, especially coming off the injury and things like that, this is not a team that's going to pressure the passer in Carolina. They traded Brian Burns, the aforementioned Brian Burns, to the Giants. And then you look at their depth chart. There's not a lot of, I mean, they signed Jadeveon Clowney. They're like the 10th team to do the Jadeveon Clowney experience after he's coming off his maybe one of his best career years in Baltimore last year. Are they going to be able to get the best out of him? I like Jura Evero, the defensive coordinator, but again, this is not a group that's littered with edge rushers in Carolina. Derek Brown's an interior guy. He is their best player. The Saints are weakest at the offensive tackle spot. So that would maybe be, if the Saints offense is able to access the ceiling in week one, that would likely be why. But I'm with you that I'm probably not rushing to start Rashid Shaheed in this week. I'd almost like to see it first before kind of knowing if we're going to get that real receiver role. And honestly, Tara, I feel a little bit the same with maybe the next two receivers on your list, but certainly this one, Christian Watson, Green Bay Packers wide receiver. How do we feel about him coming into week number one?
Oddly enough, I feel decently optimistic about him to where I am comfortable with playing in the flex, specifically in week one, because if you're going to play Christian Watson, you got to do it while he's healthy. He had a little scare in practice the other day, but he's healthy. He's healthy Christian Watson. And I know when we look at this, I'm a Packers fan. So when we look at this Packers receiving core,
Did not know you were a Packers fan. This is good to know.
I've got the key Packers insight here. I had everybody on Jordan Love last year. When we look at these
Sorry to cut you up, but have you and Andy Barron's come to blows about this yet? Does he know this information?
He does. He does. He was very welcoming about it, very kind about it. He said that I was, you know, potentially his favorite Packers fan ever, behind maybe like one particular person. Wow. Pat Fitzmaurice, maybe. But other than that, he said I was golden. Yeah.
That's pretty big. There's a lot of Packers fans out there. So hopefully Andy is true to his word. Hopefully it's not like midway through the season when the Bears are bad and the Packers are good again. He doesn't turn on you there. But, you know, he's a reasonably decent guy. So hopefully he sticks his word. Anyways, back to the important stuff. Christian Watson, take it away.
Oh, man, Christian Watson. So this Packers receiving core, oddly enough, when we look at it and we look at them, I think we got a pretty good picture of who they are as a whole. Jaden Reed, you know, upside is tremendous. Talent is tremendous. The problem is that his production kind of varied and ebbed and flowed with the injuries of players. We saw an uptick when Christian Watson would go out. When he'd come back, we'd see a little bit of variability in there. Romeo Doubs was the most consistent player in there. Dontayvion Wicks, obviously, massive upside, very dependent on injuries to Christian Watson. Mm-hmm. Watson, when we look at him in week one, healthy. I think this is a perfect opportunity, knowing Matt LaFleur, to get out there and specifically scheme up something for Christian Watson to get him going in the red zone, get him a touchdown, come out here and assert this dominance. When he's healthy, he likes to go on those big streaks. We saw it at the end of last season before, obviously, he got injured yet again. He had a four-game streak or a three-game streak there where he had four total touchdowns back to back to back. And it's just, I know it feels weird leaning into literally any wide receiver in this Green Bay Packers receiving core, but given the matchup against Philadelphia, given the fact that we know that points are going to be flying, I know sometimes international games can be a little volatile, but we expect this one to be a good back and forth here. Somebody in that receiving core is going to benefit. If I'm going to put my money on someone, it is Christian Watson in week one.
You are a much braver fantasy player than I am, because I've been trying to break ties against playing any Packers in week one, and that's the conservative approach. There's a few lineups for sure where I have Jaden Reed, especially a dynasty where I really like Jaden Reed as a dynasty player. I'm gonna have to end up playing him, just because even in some redraft leagues that start 3-4 wide receivers, he's going to be a starting option there. But in a typical, like, you're starting two receivers and one flex, he's a guy I'd even try to break ties in favor of not playing him, just because I don't know what the rotation looks like. I have a feeling that our Packers wide receiver takes and our rest of season rankings are going to be a lot stronger after week one, maybe to a fault, honestly. Like, we might overreact to what week one looks like for these guys from a rotation standpoint. I will say the thing that makes me want to go against everything that I just said and maybe follow your advice here about Christian Watson and any of these guys is that this defense was not good last year. They bring in Vic Fangio, which is going to make them better over the long term. But Tara, we've seen this over the course of Vic Fangio's career. It takes some time for these defenses to get rolling, to get acclimated. And these are, you know, there are some young corners here. Quinyon Mitchell's a young player. Cooper DeJean is a young player. He's probably going to play some nickelback for them, if not also a safety. Keely Ringo, their second year cornerback. Like, I don't know that these guys are going to be coming in here ready to shut down wide receivers. And Jordan Love is just, I have so much faith in Jordan Love, your guy, Jordan Love. He was one of my guys at quarterback this year. I ended up taking a lot of him just because I don't know how to pick these wide receivers between each other. Why not just take the guy who's going to try to throw him the ball? So I'm generally optimistic about the Packers in week one. I think they're going to win this game. I think they're going to score a lot of points. It feels stupid then, Tara, to say I don't want to start any of these receivers. But you're right, though. Similar to what I said with Devin Singletary. If you're not going to start Christian Watson when he's healthy, then what are you doing?
It's this week one opportunity here. These are guys that you might not, honestly, you might not get. I didn't draft Christian Watson. I'm not going to lie there. Okay. But yeah, because unfortunately, we're hoping that he finally, you know, has this hamstring injury, you know, handled and we don't see this repeat again. But I don't know if I was willing to really take that risk there, especially when the upside can be a little volatile there. But if you drafted him, you got to play him when he's healthy. So that's the exact reason right there. These players right here, when you have the opportunity to lean into it early in the season, when you have more comfort with it, more guarantees in terms of volume, do it before you no longer get the opportunity to do so.
He feels very boom bust in week one. And honestly, I love this three receiver set we're working with right now. Rashid Shaheed, Christian Watson, and Brian Thomas Jr., Jaguars rookie receiver. He also seems to fit this ilk so much to the point, Tara, that when I was analyzing Brian Thomas as a pre-draft player, I said he was kind of the more actualized version of a wide receiver as to what people kind of want Christian Watson to be. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about him here in week one as a make or break player?
So I was a little surprised. I've been doing start sit shows a lot. I did some on Tuesday on the Yahoo Fantasy social channels. And I was very surprised that Brian Thomas was one of the more common people that were mentioned. I thought it was a little bit more of a risky in terms of having to convince people, but they're already sitting there trying to figure out, is this a guy that I'm flexing comparing to like a Calvin Ridley and stuff like that. That's the easy comparison on top of my mind in terms of, do I play this guy, Brian Thomas, in a good matchup, in a matchup against Miami where there's going to be extreme volume? He's had looked fantastic all preseason, like he could be the potential wide receiver one. Or do I go with some of these other players who are very proven, strong veterans? We trust them, but they're in bad matchups. Maybe they're with a shut down corner and they don't have that high upside, maybe in a lower scoring game. You look at a guy like Brian Thomas and it feels a bit uncomfortable to start him as a rookie, where we're starting Marvin Harrison Jr., we're starting Malik Nabers, although some people are a little bit on the fence on that one. But when it comes to Brian Thomas, it's a little less clear. But oddly enough, I think, you know, between all of the rookie receivers that are outside of those first two that we mentioned, I think this is the one that really actually does have a defined role. We talked about Calvin Ridley now in Tennessee. That's the exact role that they want Brian Thomas to step into. We know the production that he can get. When we had Calvin Ridley last year, we were a little bit disappointed on a week-to-week basis in terms of the production, but it was because it was Calvin Ridley, not because the production was paltry. We just expected more from him for what we drafted him. If we get that type of production and that type of usage out of Brian Thomas, that's a weekly start, in my opinion. Definitely a flex. And this is the perfect week to just go ahead and lean into it and do it. Very interesting sleeper candidate for the week. And I was surprised a lot of people are considering it. So I'm here to tell people, I've been very positive in this make or break here. I'm here to tell people it's okay to lean into Brian Thomas in week one.
Yeah, you're actually the highest among the Yahoo rankers on Brian Thomas in week one. You have him as wide receiver 40, which is pretty, you know, everybody's in range with that. It's wide receiver 43, but you're still the highest there. And yeah, I mean, you've got him over some interesting players for sure. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, Josh Palmer, Jameson Williams, Xavier Worthy. This is being published on frickin' Friday, so I shouldn't even say that because we're going to know the results of that. You know, Jordan Addison, Ladd McConkey, you know, another kind of like exciting rookie receiver. So yeah, he's definitely, you know, he's kind of in that range of players you're considering with Keenan Allen, Jaden Reed, Christian Kirk, Cortland Sutton. Any names there that you're like, no, I'm trusting the veteran and this is kind of the reason why, or are you bold enough to go with Brian Thomas against some of those players?
I think the one that maybe I've been teetering on is a guy like Cortland Sutton, just because I know for sure that is the wide receiver. Am I threatened by Josh Reynolds? Not particularly. I know he's the wide receiver one. Bo Nix has looked very solid. So if there's one that I could lean into, that's probably the one. But it's really the matchup here. In addition to trusting that Brian Thomas is going to be, you know, I don't want to say wide receiver one right off the bat, but
sure,
when we look at him, we know for sure that there's a certain level of snap count that he's going to get. He's going to be on the field. So it's a matter of whether or not, it's not him scratching for the opportunity. It's, can you make the most out of the balls that are definitely going to be thrown at you in this matchup with Miami, where Jacksonville is going to be chasing points? I expect Tua and company to light it up, and I expect Trevor Lawrence to have to play catch up.
The best point you made here, I think, about Brian Thomas was that if he has the Calvin Ridley season from last year, we're going to love that out of Brian Thomas, because he was 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, 76 catches on 136 targets. I don't know that Brian Thomas rookie season is going to handle 136 targets, but I could see it being very similar. Like, I know this because I drafted way too much Calvin Ridley last year. It was a roller coaster to get there. I think Brian Thomas will have some roller coasters in his production, but ran a route on 80% of the dropbacks with Trevor Lawrence in the preseason. I expect that to be pretty similar in week one. So I don't know if I'm bold enough to just be like, yes, Brian Thomas must start. I'm glad you are bold enough to do that, because I have been he's a guy I really got higher on over the course of August. And again, I'm prepared for the roller coaster. Be prepared for the volatility. But I do like him here as maybe a prop bet guy in week one. I'm going to look at that definitely once we get off this show as well. Let's go to another rookie here. Another rookie pass catcher, Brock Bowers, Raiders tight end.
I'm going to be a little bit more pessimistic here when talking about Brock Bowers, because I do love him. The problem here is that if you drafted him, and I know this because I did, if you drafted him, you probably drafted him to be your tight end one, right? Mm. You were probably not wanting to immediately hit the waiver wire and grab somebody else to stream and, you know, have to wait, you know, waste the bench spot on two tight ends. And it's just, it's not an ideal situation here, dealing with the foot injury in preseason. And it's still something that's kind of lingering. We did get a little positive news that, you know, he's, you know, expected, I guess the exact words from Antonio Pierce where he feels really good about it. It doesn't give us a lot to work with, but it tells us that you're pushing in a positive direction here. But at the same time, you kind of wonder if this is really something that has been bothering him or kind of lingering here. Do they just kind of limit him? That's the issue here. Are we going to limit him in this game? And do we feel confident that the volume is going to be here in this Vegas and Chargers game where, you know, there are things that are different. There's coaching staff that's different. Quarterback is technically different, but, you know, generally lots of the same. Are we going to get one of those same ugly LA Chargers and Las Vegas Raiders matchups that we got last year? And if that's the case, Brock Bowers, I don't know if we're going to get a lot of, you know, positive production out of him that you would actually want in your fantasy lineup. So this one for me, I feel bad about it. But I think I would prefer to hit the waiver wire and grab somebody else that I feel more confident about in terms of how much that player is actually going to be on the field compared to Brock Bowers, where for all we know, he could get out there and play 30% of snaps. And that would be kind of ugly for us from a fantasy perspective. Are you comfortable with him at all? Did you draft any shares?
I didn't draft any. So this is like a non-stakes question for me, but it's a good one because I think there's a non-zero chance that Michael Mayer just plays way more in week one, that he runs more routes. You know, this is a guy who was around last year, different offensive coordinator, but same head coach who was there when, you know, Mayer's kind of doing his thing late in the year. And Mayer's a good player, right? Like, I think he showed pretty well as a rookie. I think there'll be a 12 personnel based offense. Those two guys are going to be on the field together a lot. At the same time, I also don't even know like really what the role is for Brock Bowers, right? I think Michael Mayer probably profiles more as that traditional inline Y tight end. Brock Bowers maybe more of like a movable chess piece, that secondary kind of pass catching tight end. So that also is kind of enough of a reason for me to be like, I don't really know what I'm doing here in week one with Brock Bowers coming off the injury. I think there's especially, you know, a reason to be spooked here. So no, the answer is I don't feel like comfortable starting Brock Bowers, but you mentioned that like you want to kind of maybe hit the waiver wire here. Are there any guys that stand out to you as someone like if they're available in leagues, maybe you go this way as opposed to the Brock Bowers experience?
Yeah, if he's there, he's been the hot ticket. It's Taysom Hill. I've been watching his roster percentage skyrocket up there. So it, you know, by the time you listen to this pod, it might not be available for you. But if he is there, we talked about when we were talking about the New Orleans Carolina matchup in Rashid Shaheed. We talked about the Panthers and that defense right there. The pass rush is going to struggle. Their run game was already atrocious. They have no run defense, and I don't expect it to get any better. And that benefits both Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill. So if you, for the tight end, if you want to pivot to the availability of Taysom Hill and he's there, I would advise it.
Man, the Taysom Hill stuff. I thought about starting him in a dynasty league where I have Taysom Hill, but I couldn't do it. I don't know. We'll see. Every time they try to lean too much into the Taysom Hill experience, it feels like they're just kind of out of ideas. It makes me nervous that the Saints are already here before week one. Like, yeah, we're really leaning into the Taysom Hill experience. So
love him.
Yeah, we love, man, how many football players can do that many things? I mean, which is a fair point, but at the same time, from like a fantasy perspective, projecting the usage makes it difficult. I think a guy like Dalton Schultz, who might not be widely available, but is probably available in some leagues. I would rather throw out a guy like him just because, you know, he's going to play all the downs. He's going to be out there for a majority of snaps, and that should be a high scoring game. But yeah, once we get to kind of, you know, the Kate Ottens of the world or the Cole Kmets, I'm probably still chancing it with Bowers there, but I don't know. Yeah, Taysom Hill, he's definitely more of like a high upside dart throw probably than a guy like Brock Bowers is, simply because he's going to get used around the goal line where we just don't really know what Bowers' role is going to be. Speaking of rookies that we don't really know what their role is going to be, I think that's a perfect transition to Bills rookie wide receiver, Keon Coleman.
It is, yes, this Bills wide receiver room, trying to figure out exactly who is going to be the wide receiver one. It's difficult. We don't really have a tip-off here. And I do like Keon Coleman. I do. And I think that over the season, he can acquire the wide receiver one role within this offense. But at the same time, we're talking about week one rookie, not in that kind of defined. We talked about Brian Thomas. That's kind of a defined role here. You mentioned the 80% snap count with Trevor Lawrence. We can say with a certain level of, you know, certainty that we feel comfortable that Brian Thomas is going to be on the field for X amount of time. We can't really say that with Keon Coleman. He did get high usage, but for all we know, that could very well be them just trying to see what they had out of him, try and get him used to and get him as many snaps as possible. We know that Khalil Shakir is going to be a factor. We know that Curtis Samuel has a history as well. And Dalton Kincaid is also someone that could lead this team in receiving. So there's so many directions that it can go. And quite frankly, the ground game could be what you want to lean into as well with James Cook. So there's just, is this a risk in terms of a rookie that I want to take in week one? I don't know if I can do it. I do like the matchup. It's a good matchup. Arizona has made some improvements to their defense, but I don't know if it's enough right off the bat. We mentioned that sometimes these changes take time in order to really set in. So right off the bat, this should be a fairly high-scoring game. Vegas expects it to be a high-scoring game. It's not all going to come from one side versus the other. Should be a good back and forth here, good pass volume. But I don't know if Keon Coleman is the one that I initially want to lean into. When you're looking at that offense, you probably say, I feel more comfortable in terms of the volume that a Khalil Shakir will get. I know that Dalton Kincaid will get this. I don't know what I'm getting out of Keon Coleman.
It's very similar to the conversation we had about the Green Bay Packers wide receivers, which is funny because it feels like these two receiver cores have been the number one kind of topic of the offseason. We don't know what the rotation is going to be like. And I think we're coming here full circle. It's time to put answers down for week one. And I still feel like I don't really know what the rotation is going to be like in Buffalo. So I would rather not have to start any Bills wide receiver. I'm with you, and I've said this earlier in the show. I said this on yesterday's show. If you have to start a Bills wide receiver in week one, I think it should be Khalil Shakir because I expect him to play the most, especially since Curtis Samuel's coming off an injury. And like Khalil Shakir, I know is a good football player. I've seen it in the NFL. I liked him a lot as a prospect. I know he's a good football player. I think it's just his season-long role is probably the biggest question. With Keon Coleman, it's almost the inverse. Is I'm not sure how good a football player he is. I think over time he can grow into a role, but like week one, his rookie season, where I had some pretty big questions about him as a separator. Do they view him as an outside guy? I want to see kind of where they deploy him. That might take, like we talked about with Nate Tice yesterday, that might take a whole half of a season to figure out where are we playing Keon Coleman. So he is definitely a guy I'd like to not play in week one. How do you, just general philosophical question, Tara, before we move on to keys to winning. How do you approach these kind of like slow developing rookie wide receivers? Like if you, let's say you have Keon Coleman, maybe did you draft any Keon Coleman? You have like some teams with Keon Coleman?
I have a little bit of Keon Coleman.
All right. So let's say one of those teams, you've got Keon Coleman. He comes out in week one and he's like, he runs the fourth or fifth most routes on the team because he's kind of getting slowly mixed in. A la like Rashee Rice, honestly, last year in week one, but there are some splash plays. What's your like patience level for these guys? Do you try to like, do you advise people to hang on or what's your like, or how quick are you to kind of drop some of these guys when they're not playing very much?
I have learned to be very, very patient. And especially in draft season with players like this, just reminding people, even deeper rookies as well, reminding people like, hey, I recommend these players. I think they can be something, but please don't draft them if you are skittish, if you know that you are going to drop them to the waiver wire in week one or two because there was something hot on the waiver wire and you're disappointed that this rookie didn't pop immediately in week one. You got to show patience. I like to always go back to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. That rookie season, I had Amon-Ra St. Brown. I held as long as I physically could, and it was painful. I held, and then finally I ran into like some week 8 bye or some bye issue, and I had to drop, thinking, okay, I'll just pick him up right after. I'm not losing faith. I know what's going to happen. I'm just waiting, but I got to make this move this week. Somebody sniped me, got him, and lo and behold, I kid you not, faced that fantasy manager in the championship and they beat me with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Because that's the fact. These guys, these rookies, not everyone can be a Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase right off the bat. You can't. There are guys that are in these situations where they will take a little bit more time to develop. And you cannot panic on that. You have to hold steady, hold as long as you can, and know that heading in that you can't overreact to the usage early on. These were guys that we know will take some time to implement in their offense. These are not the Malik Nabers that are going to be right off the bat being the wide receiver one and the initial target in their offense. So philosophically, I've learned to be very patient with them and draft them knowing that they're sitting on my bench for a reason because I'm not starting them now, but I feel very comfortable that at some point this season, that back half surge is going to have, they're going to carry, and it's going to carry me to a championship.
It's so funny that we bring up, you know, Rashee Rice and Amon-Ra St. Brown, because I actually think that's how Keon Coleman would be best deployed, is in that type of role. And it's the exact story that you just told there. I said this all the time. It's like a lot of the times people that draft Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown's one of the league winners at the end of the season. Not always for the person that drafts them. So exactly. It is an exercise in patience, but sometimes, hey, you got to fill in somebody for a bye week, or you got to pick up that hot running back of the week. So, Coleman's definitely a guy to watch the early season usage, but probably not someone we want to play in week one. So those are Tara's make or break players, not all guys that we're trying to throw out there in week one, but let's talk about some players that we do want you to play in week one. And let's toss it to our Keys to Winning presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week one, our key to winning is picking some guys that are going to make the difference in your flex spot. We want you, no, need you to start 1-0. So Tara, give me one player that managers could potentially be debating putting in that final starting spot that are worth the shot and going to help you pick, going to help you come out on top to start the season.
I know for a fact that people are debating on Calvin Ridley, and you would think, like, it's Calvin Ridley. How are we debating? But there's a lot of skepticism sometimes about what this Tennessee offense is going to be. There's skepticism around Will Levis. And then there's also the impact of the Chicago defense that people have grown to respect now and understand that they are a strong crew. Their secondary has talent and they can shut wide receiver ones down. That said, it is Calvin Ridley. And I fully expect him to be the wide receiver one target in this offense. We do have DeAndre Hopkins that's going to be in there. It sounds like he is going to play dealing with these injuries. But when we're looking at this offense and the person that I think that Will Levis is going to lean into, the player that is going to help Will Levis make that leap that we're looking for, it's Calvin Ridley. So I get that it's a tough defensive matchup. It's not ideal, but I still think that if you're debating on whether or not to include him, he's still somebody that I want to lean into. You can't always punish the wide receiver ones. You can't fade somebody with extreme talent just because they're playing the high-end cornerbacks, the shutdown cornerbacks. They can still get theirs. We've seen it before with these wide receiver ones, and I think Calvin Ridley is going to pull through for us this week.
I'm with you. I like Ridley as a wide receiver three in week one, and my player is actually of a similar vein, he's not quite old, but he's certainly not one of these hot young second-year wide receivers, and he was drafted in kind of the wide receiver 30-plus range. It's Chris Godwin, another guy that, you know, is a reception-perception favorite, long-term guy. Chris Godwin last year played 37% of his routes in the slot, according to Pro Football Focus. We know he's going to be back up closer to that 65-70% range from his previous seasons. I love that for Godwin's game. I think that's a good position, good deployment for him. And man, Washington's defense got beat up everywhere last year. They allowed the most yards per game to outside wide receivers, or second most, right up there with the Tennessee Titans, ironically enough, who we just discussed. But they also got beat up in the slot as well, allowed 80.3 yards per game to slot receivers last season. It's a new defensive staff, obviously, with Dan Quinn as the head coach there. They brought in some new players, but I look at that depth chart, Tara, and I don't see a lot of difference makers for Washington on the defensive side. So Chris Godwin, to me, he's going to fall into that wide receiver three range, but I know I drafted some Chris Godwin, and I think he is a player, just like Calvin Ridley, to throw out in week one and try to grab that week one win. Tara Roberts, this podcast, week one preview, was a big win for you. Big win finding out that you're a Packers fan. Big win finding out that you've got some great takes on these make or break players. Really appreciate you stopping by. This was fantastic. Tell the people what you got working on here as we head into week one and what they can check out.
Yeah, Make or Break. If you want to go and check out the Make or Break article and learn more about these players, I've got a Make or Break article that is coming out every single week. And also make sure that you are checking out the social lives. I think this one will, the next one will be wrapped up by the time y'all are listening to this podcast. But every single Tuesday and Thursday, I'm doing lives on the Yahoo social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok at 6 p.m. EST. You can come and get all your start sit questions there. I am doing the dirty work for everyone here. I'm taking all the start sit questions. I love it for a full hour, and just stop by, ask them. It's my specialty.
It is number one. Yes, it is your specialty. And number two, you're right. It is the dirty work. Okay. Instead of tweeting at, you know, your favorite fantasy analyst and be like, please, please, I hope they answer my question. Tune into Tara's live stream Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Like, she'll actually answer your questions, and it will be a good answer. Tara knows her stuff. And that's why also, Tara, the people should check both of us out on Fantasy Football Live Sunday mornings, noon Eastern. We are kicking off, man. It's going to be great. You're going to be joining the cast this year with Jason Fitz. Jason Fitz, he's fine. Andy Behrens, also... He's decent, as I said earlier, but I'm very excited you're going to be part of the cast. So people should check that out on YouTube, on Instagram. Well, not on Instagram, I'm talking about on YouTube, social media platforms, and of course on the Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Fantasy app. Make sure to watch Fantasy Football Live all season long because it's going to be fantastic. As for this show, that's going to do it for us. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you tune into this show, next time you hear me, well, after you watch FFL in week one, but next time you hear this podcast, week one, Sunday, is going to be in the books, and Andy Behrens will be back to join the show to break it all down. I cannot believe it's here. Thank God we have football. We have real games to talk about. Good luck to all your fantasy teams in week one. Try not to tilt. Try not to lose your face out there. Let's have a good time. And until then, we're out.